Welcome to the Swing Set. Climb on up. There is always a swing available. On Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, we explore ethically non-monogamous relationships, the pleasures and passions, the promise and pitfalls. We discuss all aspects of ethical non-monogamy in a fun, open, and welcoming fashion, with a gleam in our eye, a bounce in our step, our hands down your pants. Sorry, got ahead of myself. We may be biased. In fact, we most certainly are. But we don't sugarcoat, and each of us speaks honestly and earnestly about our thoughts, ideas, and experiences throughout our very own lives on the swing set. Thanks for swinging by.
Hey, Cooper, guess what?
What's that, Shira?
I just found the most amazingly sex-positive, eco-friendly, progressive, female-run sex shop.
Oh, really? This place sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Shira B. Cat stamp of approval?
They have the cutest name. They're called Smitten Kitten. Their brick-and-mortar store is located in Minneapolis, and their online shop is located at www.smittenkittenonline.com. They specialize in high-quality sex toys and equipment for people of all genders and sexual orientations. Handmade, one-of-a-kind items, non-toxic, medical-grade toys, educational books and DVDs, and even ethically produced porn on demand.
Oh, Shira.
What?
Get with the times! Everybody knows about SmittenKittenOnline.com. In fact, Life on the Swing Set has partnered with Smitten Kitten to give all of our listeners a 10% discount when they buy items from their online store. All our listeners have to do is enter the code SWINGSET at checkout, and boom! Discount.
No way. I can use it too? They have the super hot harness I got my eye on.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to smittenkittenonline.com and use the product code SWINGSET. Not only will you get 10% off your purchase, but you'll also be supporting one of the most progressive and sex-positive businesses in the industry.
All right, Cooper, I'm on it. www.smittenkittenonline.com. Discount code SWINGSET.
You'll be glad you came.
Okay, welcome back to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. This is a part two of what I'm sure is going to be a long and multifaceted series of episodes, Swinging for Dummies. I'm Cooper Beckett, and tonight joining me is...
Hey everybody, it's Ginger!
Hi, this is Dylan.
This is Shira B. Katz.
And this is the Paw.
So, last week, I highly recommend starting with last week's episode if you're just joining us, otherwise you might be confused. But last week, we got as far as realizing you're different than everybody else and thinking you might want to be non-monogamous. Then I think this week we should jump right into, you've discovered this about yourself, you would like to have relationships, sex, intimacy outside of your primary relationship, and we are assuming you are in a primary relationship for this series.
That makes sense.
How do you tell your partner? This question comes up a lot in the phrasing of, how do I convince my partner to swing? And I, first of all, think that this is a really bad way to think about the question.
Yeah, you know, I've actually been surprised at how many times I've been asked, so how do I convince my wife, specifically my wife, to swing?
Yeah.
And usually I start out by saying, well, you really don't want to try and convince her to do this. You really want to think about why you want to do it and then talk to her about why you want to do what you want to do and why you want to still be with her and why you want to do it with her. And then see where things go after that point.
And I think one of the important parts about that is if you think there's a chance she's going to feel rejected by this conversation, really lean heavily on the how much I love you part of the conversation, and that this is not about less time with you or less intimacy with you. It's about introducing more to my life, but more importantly, to our life. We're going to go with the swinging paradigm because it is swinging for dummies, which generally is a couple-based thing. Let's talk about talking to your partner about this.
Well, I'm definitely going to second or third or wherever we were in terms of the using the word convince or coerce or...
Oh, coerce is just far worse there.
Yeah, or anything of the sort. I mean, it's certainly... It's not... Let me put it this way. When you're raising, becoming open... or swinging with your partner for the first time, it seems as though there should be some sort of lead up even before the conversation. And whether that's, I don't know what that would look like other than maybe having a more generic discussion around monogamy or read this article and tell me what you think or... just a very gentle introduction of the concept in theory, even before you might say, this is what I want to do, because I feel like if you're already at the place where you are interested in trying swinging, you've already done some of the work, like we talked about a bit in the last episode. You've already done some of the work to kind of grasp it and understand what it is about you that wants that. And maybe you've browsed the internet and found swinger sites, and maybe you've stumbled upon our website. Maybe you've read articles about the new monogamy that are trending in, you know, even in the New York Times or in Time Magazine or something of the sort, that's caught your attention. Mm-hmm. And so to do it in a generic way first, to catch your partner up, even about alternative ways of alternative partnerships or alternative ways of structuring your partnership makes sense, because it seems to me that having the discussion out of thin air one day with your partner, where you sit them down over a glass of wine and say, oh, by the way,
I've been looking at these websites.
Right. I'm interested in bringing someone else into our relationship, or I'm interested in having sex with someone else, or however other ways you might start that conversation when it's about the two of you. I think it's a much, I don't want to say safer, it's just a more, it's a wiser route to start with. There is this other way of making your relationship work, and this is how other people have done it, and I wanted you to know about that. Mm-hmm. And in a way that's not disingenuous, in a way that's authentic, and saying, you know, this is something that's occurred to me, but I just wanted you to know that this is the gamut of things that are, you know, ways to make it work that are out there, and start there.
Or what about instead of introducing it as something you want to do, as introducing it as something you are? Instead of saying,
honey...
That could
be threatening.
That's true. That could be threatening.
If you say, I am this, then that instantly removes the could we be this discussion. You're jumping directly to the deal breaker portion of the question.
Well, that fair enough. I guess I see that. But at some point... Once you've realized within yourself that this is who you think you are and this is what you want to do, there's going to be eventually a deal breaker question in your
head. Well, you need to decide whether or not it is a deal breaker.
Right.
If you've realized this, you know, you can realize you're open. You can realize you're progressive. You can realize you're non-vanilla without actively pursuing any of that. It becomes the deal breaker only when your partner is uninterested in it and you want to pursue it to the detriment of your relationship. If your partner is fully uninterested and unsupportive, then it's a deal breaker.
I don't think that it has to be a deal breaker situation, because obviously the person has already made the choice to be with them monogamously. But if they come out and say, hey, I've made this choice to be monogamous with you, but I want you to know that I feel like I have this other spectacular thing inside of me and I would like to share it with you. I don't think it has to be a deal breaker conversation. I feel like it could be a very honest way to approach things.
It's hard to think about having deal breaker conversations that early on when I put myself back in the place of having some of those conversations with Ginger. It was much more, this is how I'm feeling. What do you think about that?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I see that you might, you know, talk about something a certain way. Can you tell me more about that? So the early exploratory conversations, I suppose that there could be people who just feel so passionate that they're non-monogamous and that's just how it is and they're going to put a deal breaker card down. But I think it's much more, it seems like it would be much more of an evolution as a revolution.
And I would also say it's possible at that point that you're not non-monogamous.
Right.
You could
right.
try it, find out you're an incredibly jealous person, which is definitely a possible result of swinging, and then say, okay, well, that experiment didn't work. So coming out and saying, by the way, I am a non-monogamous person, it feels like you're putting the cart way ahead of the horse.
Right. So the last time I was on was the Sex at Dawn mm-hmm. conversation with C. Ryan. And I want to remind everybody
C. Ryan, is that his hood name?
That's what we call him around
Yo.
Here.
Ah. Send out some props to C. Ryan.
I'm actually hoping he sends me one of those cool Sex at Dawn t-shirts.
They are very cool.
They're very
so,
cool.
So C. Ryan, drop me a Twitter. Let me know. I'll give you a shout out again. Anyhow. We, you know, we talked on the last episode about some resources opening up in the ethical slut. That might not be in, well, I guess you could call it the 101 category, but Sex at Dawn seems very benign relative
yeah,
to somebody who wants to have a conversation because it's academic and it's actually a New York Times bestseller now. So, hey, you know, you can just be doing a book club with your New York Times bestsellers. But as we talked about,
I'm sorry. I just imagined you developing a book club specifically to get to Sex at Dawn and having to work your way through other New York Times bestsellers just so you can get to the pretext of, okay, well, I guess we're going to read this academic book now. It's something about, you know, bonobos or monkeys or whatever and see what we think.
I see how Machiavellian you are in your relationship. We know where this is going.
Yeah.
So anyways, that was my contribution. Sorry. C. Ryan's cool and Sex at Dawn's a great resource.
It is a very, it's an enlightening book and you'll get to see where removed from the context of your relationship because it is different academically to think about non-monogamy and to think about it within the context of a relationship you may have been monogamous for a long time. So to present it immediately as, should we open this up, can be overwhelming. And I'm not saying that you can't let your partner know that this is something you're interested in. I'm just saying that some people need time and space to think about the concept because you know, like I've said in the past, we actually did not realize that swinging was an option. It's something you hear about, something you laugh about, something that happened in that movie, The Ice Storm, but it doesn't happen otherwise. It's not something that people do when they're happy in their relationship. In general society, you don't hear about that.
Or it's not something that people like us do.
Very true.
Yeah. There's always the perception that, yeah, people do that, but you know, they're the 70s looking dudes
yeah.
from, you know, that show that was on CBS that really was kind of weird. Yeah, but we all liked it.
And that show that was on CBS, Swingtown, is a great thing to sort of float the idea with because it's a fun show. It's a good show.
So do you think Tom and Trina are hot, baby? Could you see me in that little Tom and Trina sandwich?
One of the most interesting moments in our relationship pre-swinging was when out of nowhere, we both kind of came up with the who of our friends would you like to fuck discussion. And this was over a year before swinging ever crossed our mind. It was in one of our let's see what we can do to revitalize our fading sex life moments. And that was like a spark moment. Looking back at it, I see that single question put it in our minds far more than before. And so both of us can sort of trace back that seed that grew into the, you know, I want to fuck other people thing. Yeah. From there. It's really interesting.
So did either of you have somebody that you knew on your list, or was it all like celebrities?
No, we specifically were asking which of our friends.
Oh.
We'd had the celebrity list one because, you know, you watch Friends and you get to come up with the celebrity list because it's something the Friends do, so it couldn't possibly be
anything edgy at all.
It's not edgy, yeah.
They did it on Friends.
Exactly. Right. So you can broach the subject. Even, you know, if this is the vaguest inkling for you, if you've stumbled upon our show, sort of the way I stumbled upon Sex is Fun just by listening to Dan Savage on the recommendation of a friend. You know, you can fall down the rabbit hole into open sexuality very easily. And if you get this feeling that maybe this is something you might be interested in, start asking open questions. They don't have to be about your relationship. They can just be about feelings and what, you know, you can ask your partner what they thought of other people. And once they see, you're not going to get mad at them because often on sitcoms, that's a trap. Then it allows for far more open conversation. And then when you get to the point where you want to have that discussion about this is something I'm interested in, it's not a blindside out of the blue because you can almost guarantee yourself, absolutely not. When you blindside your partner with something like that out of the blue, even if they're vaguely interested.
I was just going to say, Cooper, have you listened to any of the vanilla monogamous podcasts out there?
No, I went from Dan Savage to Sex is Fun, and that's really it.
So it's really interesting because a lot of podcasts out there occur between either a couple of straight vanilla guys or a guy and his monogamous girl or girl, you know, whatever I'm saying. There's a lot of heteronormative vanilla podcasts out there about mm-hmm. sexuality. And I have found it incredibly intriguing and a little bit sad in so far that I have found a theme that when people talk about on these podcasts, their internal relationship and the sexuality between the two, the, you know, the male and the female heteronormative monogamous vanilla relationship. See, I know, I'm very San Francisco.
Derision,
right now. I apologize.
Derision.
I'm sorry.
I hear derision.
But what you see is you see a constant baiting of the female part of the couple towards the male couple part of the couple. And it's very often like, oh, well, what would you think if you were ever presented with the opportunity to be with someone new? And so there is a constant baiting of in these vanilla relationships where they desperately want their partner to say, no, I would never. So I could see how bringing up these possibilities, bringing up the conversation would be so very tricky because
Shira, this was such a good lead in to what I was going to say. Thank you, dear.
You're welcome. Because I do like being symbiotic with you.
The point that I wanted to make was that I think it's so important to approach it from, this is something that I'm suggesting or a conversation that I want to have so that we can share in that experience. And that's so different than the kind of baiting, leading question that you just referenced. And it seems that the healthy way to approach the conversation would be much more as I'm asking, you know, us to kind of go down this road or to have these conversations. in a way that we can create a shared experience around our sexuality or our relationships that's different than we have right now.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, this is something I want to do, and if you don't want to do it, I'm going to go get in another relationship. Because that's very selfish, and I don't think that's what we're really advocating for. I think it's something that you really are, no matter how you decide that you like to play, you really are going down the road together.
Right. It depends on your amount of despair in the situation, though, right?
Of course. But sometimes within despair, you find out that your partner is having the exact fucking same despair. And if
thus
you just talk about it, you would have figured this out a year before.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's obviously easier to talk about it before you get to that level. But it is, ultimately, you have to talk about it as what you want, how you want to share going forward.
And so you do have to decide. You have to decide what you want before you approach this conversation, I guess.
Or at least what direction you want to go in.
Right.
Because, I mean, it doesn't have to be a big mammoth discussion. You can talk for a year about whether or not you're going in a direction, because every conversation you have will either get you closer or expose reasons why it's not compatible with your relationship or with you. When you see these hiccups, you can deal with them on a case-by-case basis rather than immediately plunging down and saying, this is what we're doing.
So let's say that you're able to get your partner on the same wavelength as you, Cooper.
As me, personally?
Well, you know, I'm asking you specifically.
Okay.
Let's say I am a swinger wannabe and I'm like finally able to get my partner to be like, all right, maybe this is a good idea. What do I do first? Like, how do we start?
Well, see, I always recommend fantasy play, even though fantasy play is really not my thing. See, what I mentioned before about the which of our friends would you fuck, it was not then leading to a hot and steamy sex session where we pretended we were fucking those friends. It just was a question and an answer and a huh. But I recommend to other people who might be able to work through some of their questions of possible jealousy to start introducing the idea of more people being involved in your relationship to your sex play.
Yeah. So it helps to be able to tell stories while you're fucking. That's one, like,
hot.
You know, kind of create a fantasy.
Fantasy was big for us.
Yeah.
That.
For me.
Yeah, as an English person, English major, you know, that was something. That came.
You need an accent now, I'm sorry, professor.
I was like, what?
I have found the perfect use for the liberal arts education. So all of those, you folks out there who are liberal arts people, use it in your fantasy life.
You mean okay. one of the only uses?
An impromptu short story involving a variation of another partner or partners that then you have to read your audience, right?
Absolutely.
And then you kind of go down one road or the other. You open up doors, you close them. Ginger's getting hot and wet right now, just recalling this. For those that are less inclined, I would also say that there is the old standard penthouse letters approach.
Oh, reading the penthouse letters?
Ginger, do you remember that long, 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 long time ago, we started reading to each other a letter? And it was...
Oh, gosh.
Do you remember that? That was so long ago, yeah.
Were you plotting then?
No, I wasn't plotting.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not the Cooper Machiavellian... Start a book club so we get to sex at dawn.
Cooper's our only Machiavellian fellow. Right,
yes,
here.
Cooper, the one who just let it go until it boiled over. Yes, he's the Machiavellian one.
No, but I was thinking about going back to that. Like, you know what? If you want to and like read one together, we invented a sexual position we called the reading position.
We do. We do have the reading position. It's very comfortable.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
This
that
is,
you would have the reading position.
It does, and it sounds like a sexual position to those, only those going to Harvard or perhaps MIT.
That's so funny.
It's the smarty pants position.
It's the smarty pants position. I love it. We should, we need to have a lesson on the reading position. It's actually quite comfortable for reading and for fucking. It's comfortable. It's comfortable in both ways.
When and the idea of bringing this letters to Penthouse in or sexy erotica in is a variation on the idea that really what you need to be doing at this point is communicating not necessarily about swinging, non-monogamy, anything like that. What you need to be communicating about is your sexuality, is your interests in your relationship, not even in your relationship between you. Just this is the greatest point for so what have we not done that you might be interested in doing conversation,
right?
Or what totally. Have you thought about and never expressed before? And really make it a judgment-free zone, because in order to open up to your partner and have your partner open up to you, they need to feel like no matter what they say, even if they say, you know, I want to get you down in the bathtub and shit on your face, you need to give yourself that zone where it's going to be okay if they say that, even if you're not interested in pursuing that, which I know most of us are not. You need to be okay
Cooper,
with
I love
that
you,
comment.
But that's not okay.
That's not okay.
that idea of the judgment-free zone, it's important to put that out there first.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you can say no to things, like,
I
for
agree.
Example, the example you used.
and Shira has said emphatically no.
But I agree to some extent that you shouldn't even be afraid of that rejection to some extent, right? So if you get rejected at that point and this is something you want in your life, I mean, maybe it fucking is a deal breaker. Like, if you need your face to
well,
have
yes,
some
but
fucking
that's,
feces on that, it, maybe you need to put that out there
game,
sooner
Shira.
Rather than later.
Maybe that's, facial feces wasn't the best
maybe not.
Starting point to have a discussion about this. You may want to start with little things first.
But you... I agree that there's some amount of breaking in to do, but, you know, at some point you need to think that sooner is going to be better than later when you're disclosing what you want out of life.
When you truly know what you want, absolutely.
If everybody was doing it the healthy way, they would have disclosed this early on in the relationship. And right. If it was a deal breaker, we're talking about people who have gotten to a certain point in their relationship where maybe they haven't talked about stuff they're interested in, and nobody wants to feel rejected. Everybody's afraid of rejection. So you need to give yourself the freedom to say, okay.
But maybe rejection isn't a bad thing for someone's life, is all I'm saying.
yourself vulnerable.
You're a real tough love person, Shira.
I am.
You really are.
Whenever we make ourselves vulnerable, we're subject to rejection. That's just part of it. But I think so much of what we're kind of talking around, this idea of communication, it's a paradox because you also have to get outside your own head.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to walk that balance between being able to communicate what you want when you want it, when particularly you know you want something for sure, you have to put that out there. And even when you're not really sure what you want, you have to be able to verbalize to your partner what you think you might want.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to let go sometimes, and you have to experience, and you got to get out of your head. And that's that safe zone that we're talking about, is being able to do that in a non-judgmental way so that then you can get back in your head, you can talk about it, and that's how you're going to evolve toward something different, a different type of relationship. I just think a lot of people never give themselves the permission to get outside their head. And they're constantly judging and evaluating through their cultural lens, through their relationship lens, through lens. And they're just like, there's like a, you know, the color commentary, the football play-by-play going on in their head as they're having the experience. And then it's never really a full experience.
Right.
It's not something that really created an impact that you can reflect on, because you were judging it the whole time that it was happening.
And you can talk this idea to death. you can talk yourself out of it completely by just over concerning yourself with the negative implications of it. And there does become that point where you have to agree that you've talked as much as you can without experiencing. And that experience, even if you have completely decided that, you know what, I'm not jealous about any of this stuff, you know, all this fantasy talk, we brought in 50 people and they've all gangbanged my wife and I'm not jealous about that at all. But that fantasy can only do so much, and you will never really know how you are going to feel about something until you actually experience it. You can get a pretty good idea.
I do think that practice is worth it, though, because you're practicing the communication that you need for when it does actually happen.
It was completely necessary for me. I wouldn't have been successful if I hadn't done that for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, you want to avoid getting into the trap, into the cycle of just talking and talking and talking and talking and talking. And
kind of support that, Cooper.
And kind of convincing yourself not to do it.
Right.
Because what, you know, it might go badly. And so when we come back, we're going to talk about that. When it comes to online dating, you at home have a lot of options available to you. But we here at Life on the Swing Set recommend Cassidy.com. We've tried many websites in the past, and while most are adequate and some are even pretty good, the one that we keep coming back to is Cassidy.com. And there are a few reasons for that. First of all, and most important to me, is ease of use. You want to put a picture on your page? You know how to do it. It's intuitive. It's built in. It's Facebook for non-monogamy. Cassidy also has one of the most aggressive campaigns out there to get the most people all around the world onto the site. Right now, potential playmates are scattered throughout regional websites. Wouldn't it be awesome if they were all in one place so you could search one site and find absolutely everyone you were interested in playing with? Well, that's where the campaign for Cassidy comes in. Cassidy need not be your only site, but we recommend you give it a try. And if you sign up using the link on our page, you support Life on the Swing Set, so we can continue bringing you what's been called the best non-monogamy podcast out there. And if that's not incentive enough, if you join Cassidy, you get to see my wife's tits. How can you argue with that? Cassidy.com. Okay, so Life on the Swing Set is going to Desire from November 3rd through 10th of 2012. So just before the apocalypse, if you believe what you read.
Oh, you mean the election?
Yes, that one.
Yes, oh. Okay.
Good, we can go out with tequila shots then.
That's
perfect.
Right.
Perfect. Right. In the sex swing. And, even better.
We're going to be doing fun party-type atmospheres. We're going to be doing a speed dating thing. We're going to have a pole dancing lesson, some toy demonstrations. As you heard, we tend to like toy demonstrations. We'll probably have the Cooper there with you if I can smuggle it through Mexican security.
So, Cooper, if people are interested in joining us at Desire, how do they find out how to get there?
Well, we're going with Char Travel, and if you listened to a few episodes back, you heard them talk about how awesome sexy vacations are, and you can email them at info@chartravel.com. Or you can give them a call at 215-321-4451. Just make sure you mention that you want to go to Desire with Life on the Swing Set.
That sounds great. So if you're interested, please contact Char Travel and we'll see you there.
Okay, so we're back with Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. We're talking swinging for dummies. In the first half of tonight's show, we talked about having the discussion with your partner and fantasizing and getting them to the point where you think you're ready to make the step into reality, and how reality can complicate things. Now we're going to move into making this happen for you.
Yeah, Cooper, you were talking about eventually ceasing the communication, and I heartily support that notion. Especially, I know this isn't specific to swinging situations, but especially in polyamorous situations, you can get into a place of conversation that is so repetitive and doomsday that you will talk your way out of ever actually trying something. And that's a real fucking bummer. Mm-hmm. You want to negotiate and talk about things and boundaries. But until you actually try something out, you don't know what the reality is.
When one
Even
of the
if
things,
you're blue sky about it.
Absolutely. And one of the things you need to give yourself at the beginning of this experiment, because until it becomes your lifestyle, it's an experiment, is the permission to screw up tremendously. Because there is a chance one or both of you are really, really going to screw up early on in this experiment.
Absolutely. And you need that get out of jail free card.
Exactly.
Know?
And when I have found that the happier swingers, the people who have been doing it longer, and I'm speaking in generalizations here because we know Ginger and the prof have got it all going on, are the ones who had these significant failures or rule breakings, because I've found that breaking of implied rules is what gives you solid rules. Breaking of solid rules is what gives you reasons to break rules and discussion. Every failure is an opportunity at more communication. And you are going to find your style of swinging or non-monogamy. It's not something you're going to start on day one and have that be your style, because you really won't find it until you see, yeah, you know what? This part's not working for me. Let's not do that anymore. And the fear is always going to be that when you get to that point that this part's not working, that's going to be the end. So that's why you have to give yourself that permission to be, oops, I was wrong. Let's back off. Let's try this way instead.
So if we brought ourselves, or the listener, the proverbial listener now, to the edge of they've made this decision, the one thing that occurs to me is don't expect everything to happen at once. And I think that there's a lot of, we'll use a Tristan Taramino term again, new relationship energy that gets created whenever we want to do something different. And in swinging, I'm pretty sure that I think one of the things that creates a lot of unnecessary conflict, because I agree with you, Coop, I think that there will be stuff that happens. No matter how hard you try, there will be stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. But you can also practice some primary prevention and make sure that there's just, you know, there's some things that are avoidable that don't have to happen, but people are trying to accelerate the process, or people are trying to just jump in kind of a haphazard way without really having thought through how that circumstance might rest with what they really want to get out of the experience, as an example. Like, you know, making shit up as you go along. Like, don't do that. That's a bad idea.
Right.
So, you know, it's the idea of letting it come to you as opposed to really, you know, just kind of being patient and letting that world open up to you as opposed to just storming through and trying to, you know, run into the middle of a party and be like, I'm here, it's my first party, let's go.
Right.
Although I might do that now. It sounds like it, actually.
You probably would do that now.
and drop your pants in the middle of that statement, I think.
I think you might start with taking his shirt off, actually.
In a sexy way, I'm sure.
Oh, sure.
And one of the things that I have suggested, and I wrote an article about this, and I think it's very important, is something I'm calling the safe zone, where you basically create this artificial bubble around something you're going to do, be it your first swinger date, be it your first swinger party. And you say that, you know, no matter what happens, we're going to be okay. You know, we could go to this on this date, we could go to this party, and everything could go wrong. We could be furious with each other. It's possible. But no matter what, when we come back home, that activity, that problem stays at that party, stays at that place, and we won't do that again.
I remember when Prof and I had that conversation, and I don't remember what term we used in terms of, you know, your safe zone, but I know we had exactly that concept. Mm-hmm. When we first got started, I remember us having that conversation of whatever happens, we can always just let that be what it is and move on. We are giving that to each other.
Yeah, because you can always chalk it up as, well, that was an experiment.
Yep.
And it didn't work.
Yeah.
So, all right. And then you figure out where that leaves you. But the, I mean, I know I had a lot of fear going in about, you know, what else it could do. I mean, we were already at the edge of, we were discussing divorce at that point, and we thought, well, hey, if it destroys our relationship, we're really nowhere worse than we were right now. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to, you know, a lot of people are not in that position, and they have a very happy and healthy sex life and relationship, and they want to augment that, but there's still the concern of what if this augmentation winds up taking us down that path that we can never come back from. And so you do need to allow for the possibility that something bad for your relationship could happen.
I just wanted to put it out there for maybe the reticent partner. If they feel, just to play devil's advocate, what would you say to someone who felt like that safe zone, the anything can happen and it'll be okay zone? If someone feels like, oh, they're just saying that so they can do whatever they want and not get in trouble for it, how would you address that?
I would say that if you're actually thinking that your partner's just saying that to do what they want, you're not ready for swinging.
Oh, geez.
And you should back the fuck up, because somewhere something's happening wrong. Yeah. So, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why you would not be ready for swinging. And if there's this idea that they're just doing it for this purpose, you know, if this whole, you know, there's a lot of talk about people whose partners want to start swinging, and they're like, I just think he just wants to screw around on me. If that's the level of discourse in your relationship,
right,
you're not there.
Oh, geez, no.
So
okay, good.
So I would say definitely if they're, I mean, for me, the safe zone is about giving your partner safety, not about claiming safety for yourself.
Ooh, I like that.
And that's, everything,
yeah, that's good to put out there.
I think everything in the swinging lifestyle, and you know, I find it interesting that one of the very, very, very few rules Marilyn and I still have is about each other's comfort, not our own. And therefore, you need to be focused on your partner's happiness. That is how you maintain happiness in this lifestyle. And in non-monogamy, is making sure your partner is happy.
That's totally true. I mean, making sure your partner's happy. And it's one of the things that occurred to me. It's kind of a combination of all the things we were just talking about. Is, so you've got the safe zone. You give yourself, if you are at that place, so you give yourself that for each other's comfort. And then you move into a circumstance. Say you decide, okay, we're going to go to a club, or we're going to go out on a date, or whatever it is that is your first, you know, dipping your toe in. So you go on your date and you're all excited and you're all fired up to go, and you go out on your date or you go to the party, and it's nothing like the two of you had envisioned together, or mm-hmm. you totally strike out, or you're so nervous you can't even make a coherent sentence, whatever it is, then you have this shared experience of a lot, probably a lot of familiar but experiences, familiar emotions, but emotions you haven't experienced in quite a while because you haven't been dating.
Right.
But now you're dating together. And so now you're handling all of these new experiences as a pair and feeling, you know, whatever it is, like nervous or rejected or like you're not putting your best foot forward dating or whatever those experiences are that you have. I mean, along with the good experiences, you also have these other experiences that don't feel so great sometimes. And so you're having to handle all of these new challenges to your relationship. You are handling them together. So that is certainly a positive, but each of you may handle them differently. Mm-hmm. Some of, you know, one person rejection may roll off their back very easily and the other person lets it just go on and on and on and can't let that particular couple go. Or you have a miserable time at a party and think to yourself, gosh, we're never going to make this happen. And so you just have one partner who says, oh, I don't want to do this. And the other partner says, oh, but come on, we, you know, is more optimistic and says, let's try another party or let's try a different party. When you have all those experiences that feel challenging and can feel negative, one of the things that has always been awesome for me is to consider that Prof and I go through those together. Mm-hmm. And I reflected on it actually once in a blog about a breakup. And when you lose a lover through a breakup, that you have that shared experience together. And that's something that is, it's almost unique to, I mean, it's certainly unique to non-monogamous relationships. I mean, that you're both mourning the loss of a relationship, or that you're both lamenting a bad date, or you're both lamenting a bad party or whatever. And so taking the fact that you do that together as a positive and really focusing inward on each other and knowing that, hey, we've got each other, we're going to be okay. Let's get back out there and see what we can learn or who we can date or whatever. So that is an interesting angle that took me by surprise. And I don't know what it was like for Prof, but certainly that angle took me by surprise that, oh yeah, you're two and you're doing this together if you're doing it that way.
Right.
Dating as a couple.
I think one of the other things, just to build on what Ginger is saying, is it changes the nature of your conversations as well. It changes the nature of it, I think, in one real important way. It's about how you want your relationship to evolve in the future. And it's much more about what you're creating as opposed to many conversations that people have in their relationships are about what's happening to them. And fairly mundane stuff. And so that rich conversation, that shared experience is meaningful for folks because it is about what you're becoming and not just about what's happened to you or what's happened in the past or all the other shit that's gone on during the day or the week or the month. And I think that is important. You know, we talk about some of the scary aspects of moving towards non-monogamy and having conversations with your partner and then taking that step forward into experiences. And I just want to, at least from my perspective, say that there are some amazing aspects to our relationship that have come out of that, unexpected aspects, only because we have all these great conversations about those shared experiences and about how we want things to be different in the future. And how
absolutely
we want more of certain things in the future. Like, I want more of the 2011 New Year's Eve when Ginger wasn't wearing underwear and, you know, we had great fun with friends.
Like, Prof, can I also go on record as saying I want more of that as
yes.
well?
Yes. I think the entire Twitterverse and Facebook kingdom should have a record established of Ginger not wearing underwear.
I think so too, yes.
Lovely.
When, and
lovely.
You know, it's not, you're right. It's once you change the communication in your relationship, and not necessarily change it as though it might have been bad before, but you're choosing to be non-monogamous forces a whole new type of communication. And it's a type of communication that often feels like stuff you may have been supposed to keep hidden. So you're opening yourself up to a dramatic amount of communication and a dramatic amount of topics and conversations. And you're going to learn a lot about your partner just from the extra communication you have to make this work. And that's going to then bleed into the non-monogamous portions of your life.
Yeah. It's like right. hitting the refresh button, you know? Yeah. Sometimes you hit the refresh button and it still looks the same, and other times you're like, whoa, shit, what the hell happened? Everything's changed.
Mm-hmm.
But you're having that conversation so that you're not, you know, you're able to work through it or experience it. Not to leave any stone unturned, Cooper, if I may, the one aspect of the 101 that we did not discuss was the importance of the hot tub.
What would you like? Would you like to give us a little 5-minute treatise on the importance of a hot tub?
I think it falls at any particular part of our conversation. I think that somebody who is very interested in getting their partner to swing could go out and buy them a hot tub as a gift.
Well, as The Simpsons showed us, having a hot tub attracts swingers.
I honestly think that's true.
And then you're in the hot tub and you say, this is lovely, honey. We should have some other people in this hot tub with us.
Yeah, I can't tell you the amount I've heard from even vanilla people where hot tubs wound up with naked and usually girls making out. It's fascinating.
Yeah, even at poly parties, if there's a hot tub around, people are naked. Maybe Whoa. Not making out, but they're definitely naked. I was there. It happened recently. It was actually a breakthrough for me. I was naked in front of other people.
That is a breakthrough for you.
You were naked?
Wow. Whoa.
No. I can't believe I didn't tell you guys about this. There was a party, and there was a hot tub, and I ended up naked in front of, like, 7 other people.
Wow.
Right?
See, people.
I feel so validated. Thank you, Shira.
Yeah, no. I am here to support you.
So we should all have hot tubs. Then it becomes also the universal calling card for swingers. You know, we've had this issue where it's always hard to tell swingers in the wild. And we could just say, do you have a hot tub?
I'm not convinced that's the fail safe, though. I mean, that's like, I don't know. There's got to be a secret word or something, too.
Well, I think we need that as well. But a hot tub would be awesome. So next time, we're going to move past the hypothetical realm and actually jump in to really for real sex with other people in part 3 of Swinging for Dummies. But that's it for tonight. If you want to like us, you can on Facebook at facebook.com/theswingset. You can also like us not on Facebook, you know, just in your day-to-day life. It's easy to do. You just think about us and smile. You can contact us on Twitter or follow us. I am at Swingset Life. We have Ginger and the Prof, Shira B. Katz, and Dylan_Swingset. You can send us an email at contact@lifeontheswingset.com. Give us a call and leave us a voicemail asking a question or comment. 573-55-SWING. That's 573-557-9464. And thank you guys for joining me again tonight and having a meandering and ponderous discussion about the preparatory moves for swinging. That's where you guys would say anything resembling good night.
You're welcome. Cooper Beckett, you're a dreamboat.
Good night. Oh my gosh, it's awesome.
And thank you, listeners, for swinging by.
You're listening to a Swing Set podcast. Hear more at lifeontheswingset.com.